All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 12 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we're going to look specifically at our connection to archaic Egypt. So remember that last time we started to kind of focus in on this key word, archaic, which we're going to use to help us tell the difference between two different parts of ancient Egypt. Can anybody here explain what archaic is and perhaps what it is as opposed to another thing? Does anybody remember what those, there were two keywords. We're talking about ancient history as the whole thing. In fact, I think I'm just going to go ahead and share my screen on this here and just kind of remind you here, right? This is what we've been working on so much lately. And what I said was, well, this ancient past can be divided up into two useful segments. And if annotations work, I'll be able to show you. So this, we got kind of two segments here of this ancient past, right? Okay, and this segment starts here. And it's all ancient, right? All of it is ancient. So I would do kind of like that with a bracket, right? All of this is ancient stuff, but there's two parts to it. So I think Julia remembers what the two parts, or anybody else is welcome to say as well. What are the two parts? Why do we have two different ideas for these parts of history? Looks like I might have to put some booster there on for you. Julia, get us started. See what you can say.
Well, the two parts are archaic and classic, and we remember the classic ones, but the archaic ones are kind of muddled.
All right, that's getting a good start here. The two parts are archaic and classical, okay? I wouldn't use the word classic, even though, of course, it's closely related, but I think we prefer the word classical. All right, and Julia says that we remember the classical. I'd like a little bit closer or a little bit tighter definition on that one. We don't just remember it. Does anybody know about classical music? I hope for the sake of your soul that you're familiar with classical music, or that you become familiar with it during your lifetime. So, Opal, I mean, what is classical music? Is it from ancient Greece and Rome?
No.
No, actually, it's not. Okay, what's classical music?
It's music from, usually it's a style of making music.
Well, yes, that's not a bad answer, but classical, and it's true that it's possible for somebody today to make music in the classical style, but that's referring to the fact that it's very old music. It's not contemporary, modern, or popular, as we call it, music. Classical music is really old music. But the reason why it's classical is that people still love to listen to it. And people still learn how to play classical music. And so it's really old, but it's still alive. Can anybody make a good connection here to Athens and Rome? What is really old in our classical history, but still alive? What has been the whole purpose of your writing assignment? Something that's really old, but still alive. Opal?
Democracies and republics.
Democracy and republic. Okay, these are classical ideas, and they are still alive. So classical music, like Mozart and Beethoven, right, it's really old, but it's still alive. People really still enjoy listening to it. Democracy and republic are classical ideas, but people today still pay attention to them. All right, so on the other hand, archaic cultures before 508, 509, all right, are really old and, well, pretty much we ignore them now. It's not that we aren't fascinated by them, but it's that we just don't really feel like there's anything worth keeping going. Right? So nowadays, if we're interested in the weather, we're not going to pray to the sun god Ra. We're going to go to weather.com and use the science that teaches us about, what's that science? Meteorology. That teaches us what the weather is going to be today, right? And so we have just decided, okay, some things we are about the past. We know that people used to think in a certain way or believe certain things, but we've set those things aside. So we're not going to bother with that anymore. We're not going to worship gods that wear kind of falcon head dresses and all that kind of stuff and other things. As we're going to learn about ancient Egypt, that basically we've decided that's just not worth doing anymore. We're going to have to say to those ancient peoples, thank you for trying, but we have moved on now. So that's going to be the difference. Is that it's not so much that we don't remember, Julia. As you're going to see, we remember a lot now. We have brought this archaic history back into memory, where we did forget it for quite a long time. Okay? But it's not classical anymore in the sense that we don't keep it alive, in the sense that we don't follow it anymore. We don't do things the way that the ancient Egyptians did in the past. All right, you're going to get a set of class notes today that highlights this particular point. So you'll be able to read it, spend a little bit more time on it. It's going to be very important, guaranteed. Next week, there'll be a test question about the difference between archaic and classical. Yes, you heard me right. Next week, first test. All right, so we are getting there. So what we have to do before we get to the test is we've got to get ourselves connected to ancient Egypt and learn more about, in particular, this milestone, the Menes-Narmer unification of Egypt. We're going to see that we will kind of, we'll be back here and we'll be ready to work our way forward, because we'll know, kind of using a port-a-land chart method again, we're going to know how to go back there and get back to the present, so we'll be ready to do it. All right, Opal, put your hand down unless you want to, you know, have a question or comment here about archaic versus classical. Okay, so how are we going to connect to our ancient, to our archaic past, to archaic Egypt? So let's go and just look for a second at something really cool. Here it is. All right, take a look at this. Put it in the center here. Okay. And you guys might recognize this. We're going to see this kind of symbol again, over and over again in Egyptian art, you could call it. So we're going to see this kind of a shape of a leader, a very important person, preparing to feed ice cream to other people. And so, anyway, that's just a joke. I'm sorry. So we'll see that this is not ice cream, and he's not a nice guy. I'm very sorry. Okay, so anyway, we'll see lots of images like this, and here's kind of a young Egyptian person, you know, probably around your age, looking up in fascination, of course, because it would be quite an amazing thing to visit this temple. It's called Abu Simbel. It's an amazing temple. We've had this fascination with ancient Egypt. And if we zoom in here a little bit, we're going to see something, though, that makes it, you know, that explains why we're having such a tough, why we have a such, you know, difficult connection to ancient Egypt. And this is it. Okay. And this over here. Right. And all of this stuff over here. This is the reason why it's so hard to connect to ancient Egypt. We have these kinds of things, but what is this and what's our problem? Who knows what these are? I'm sure some people do. Patrick, what are those?
Symbols or words, maybe?
Yeah, oh, very good. They are symbols or words. In other words, they're written language. Mm-hmm. The written language. But it's a kind of language that nobody knows how to read anymore. Does anybody know the name of it? Or, well, there was a time when really nobody knew how. Literally nobody knew how. This is so interesting. Oh, but what are they called?
Hieroglyphics.
Hieroglyphics. Excellent. Right. So there were centuries and centuries, perhaps more than 2,000 years, in which nobody knew how to read these. So you could look at this picture And you could say, well, this guy is feeding everybody ice cream. Oh boy, Mr. Powell just can't help himself with that joke. Or what? Is that what he's doing? Everybody down here with their hands up in the air saying, feed me, feed me. Is that what's going on? Or what? Because it's actually, you know, Mr. Powell's a big joker, but it is actually serious. Guess what he's doing? Can you see that he's holding people by the hair? That doesn't seem like a very nice way to hold people. So what is this? Nobody gets my joke, huh? This is a club. What's he gonna do? What's he gonna do to all these nice people down here who have their hands up in the air? Sigourney?
Hit them.
Sorry?
Hit them.
Hit them, exactly. Smash them, kill them, rule them, right? Okay, so, my point here about the ice cream is a joke. I know you guys understand that, but my point is this. I mean, we could probably understand a picture like this by itself, but there's a lot of things that we can't understand. What would be one example, even if we understood? Okay, this guy is mean to everybody else. What's an example of one thing that we would not be able to know? Opal?
Why? Did they do anything to him, or is he just doing
excellent.
It to...
Excellent. What? Okay. Very good, very good. So the why we wouldn't understand. Okay, what are some of those other questions that we would be asking ourselves and we couldn't even know the answer? The most basic questions. Okay, why is actually a pretty sophisticated question. So Opal is thinking like a historian here, but what are the other things that historians need to know before they can even ask why? What are the basic questions we need to ask? In history, ever. Why is an example? What are our you just need your question words here. What are your question words? Julia?
Like, where, when, how?
Okay, where, when, how, yes. We need an even more basic one. Especially when it comes to this guy, Patrick.
So what?
Well, oh my goodness, that's again like why. That's the importance. But what do we need to know about this guy? Gabriel?
Who is he?
Who? We can't even know who, right? So, oh my goodness, what are we going to say about this? Can this be history if we don't know who? And what's the other thing that has to be in history, right? Along with the what? Let's say, you know, we have the who and we have the what. Well, guess what? There's something else we need, otherwise there's no history. What's the other question word that we need the answer to? Sigourney?
When?
Oh my goodness, right? So yeah, we need the where. We know it's Egypt. All right, we need the when. We need so many questions answered. How can we answer them? There's only one way. If we can read what they wrote. If we can read what they wrote. So this is what we have to do in order to get a connection, to get a strong connection to the ancient past. We've got to figure out how to read these things. Otherwise, we only have a weak connection. Now, that weak connection can be quite fascinating. That weak connection to the archaic past is created by a different science than history. That science is called, look at this word here, very interesting word, archaeology. What word is that related to? That's our key word of the past few lectures and today and tomorrow. Opal?
Archaic.
Archaic, right. The study of the archaic past really is the simplest. I mean, this definition they give you here is not great of a definition. It's a study of the archaic parts of the past, especially when we don't have more information. And we are connected to archaic Egypt because Europeans invented the science of archaeology. And here's why they did that. Go back here to some stuff here. Does anybody recognize this place? It's not natural. Those stones didn't get there without somebody's help. Does anybody know what this is? Well, it does say it here, so maybe that's not. Opal, go ahead.
Stonehenge.
Okay, where is that? Do you know where that is? It's in England. So anybody that ever goes to England should definitely go see Stonehenge. And so people in England knew that their archaic, primitive ancestors built this place. And they were interested in it. And so this was one of the reasons why they started making a science for studying really ancient things that we don't know an awful lot about. Here's an example of another one. A place called Pompeii, with a little picture of something in the background. Does anybody know the story of this fascinating place that archaeologists wanted to study? What's going on up here? Gabriel?
The volcano erupted and destroyed the town because of the lava and ash.
All right. Very, very good. So this place, Pompeii, is in Italy, and there's a volcano nearby called Vesuvius, and it erupted, and it totally covered this town. So when it did that, something kind of fascinating happened. Of course, it's tragic, scary, awful thing, and lots of people died, and it's a really terrible story. But when the volcano covered the whole town, does anybody, well, I don't know if I can even ask this question. I'll just explain it. When it covered the town, it basically froze that entire site in time. Everything that was there that was not destroyed all of a sudden became frozen in time and was never going to change. And so that's like a window into the past. And archaeologists are fascinated by moments like that, because then what you do is you dig under the ground and you find stuff that might be really interesting. It's like real life Minecraft. You dig under the ground and you find ancient things, including iron armor. Patrick is very interested in iron armor in Minecraft. Well, you would find things like iron tools. You would find things like steel, which is more advanced than armor, than iron, and things like that. And you would find pottery. And you would find, well, you would find maybe skeletons from people that were dead, and other things underground. Patrick, go ahead.
Probably maybe some gold and silver or bronze coins.
Excellent. Absolutely. You would find the coins that the people used as money. That's another good example of objects that archaeologists find. Okay, good. Opal, go ahead. Yeah, it would pretty much be down to bones as far as I know. Their bodies would be covered in ash, and then it would become like a fossil, just like dinosaur fossils, pretty much. So there's only so much left. Yeah, I think it's only bones. I'm not an expert of archaeology. But this is some of the things that that European archaeologists were interested in. And I'll give you another example of something that European archaeologists were interested in. Famous story that they were really fascinated by, but they didn't know the real history of it. Anybody know what this is? Patrick, what's that?
The Trojan Horse.
The Trojan Horse! Excellent! Patrick was just reading about the story of the Trojan Horse. Can you tell us a little bit about what this was?
Something that helped, I think, the Europeans.
Well, the Greeks.
Yeah, the Greeks win the war against the Trojans.
All right, very good. The war between the Greeks and the Trojans had to do with this object called the Trojan Horse. And you know what? I'm not going to tell anybody because everybody's hands didn't go up. So if you don't know the story of the Trojan Horse, then I don't want to spoil it for you. So you absolutely need to go find in your public library, or get a book off of Amazon about the Trojan horse, or the stories of Homer, who is the Greek poet. That's not what I want to do. Thank goodness. Homer is the one who wrote the story, and learn it, because it is an amazing story, lots of fun, but it seems to be connected to history, but it's not really Greek history because it's too far back. It's part of what we call archaic Greek history, and we'll learn it this year. A little bit of the story of the Greeks and the Trojans. So there were all these fascinating things that archaeology is interested in. Ancient Greece and ancient Rome. And stuff that's much more ancient than that we just don't know anything about it at all. And so that tells us about ancient times. But then, how did archaeology get us connected to ancient Egypt? Well, archaeology started to connect us to the ancient past. But then, how did it get connected to Egypt in particular? Now, let me see here which one I want to bring up. Oh, yes. Here, I'll show you. This is how it got connected to ancient Egypt. I don't know if I've ever done this one in history throughout. I think if I haven't, I will at some point. I think I did it in Asian history. Anybody recognize? Who's the guy on the white horse? Nobody knows the guy on the white horse? Does anybody recognize these things over here? In the background. Wyatt, go ahead.
This is Henry.
Go ahead, Henry.
Napoleon.
Well, okay, so you answered my initial question, which was the guy's name is Napoleon. Where is he? What's he pointing to in the background? Oh, well.
The pyramids of Egypt.
Okay, Wyatt, thank you. The pyramids of Egypt, right? We're talking about our connection to the archaic past. Here we have a man named Napoleon who was French. And he was a conqueror. He was a French general. And here he is in Egypt. And as it turns out, he's conquering Egypt at this very moment that this painting is meant to represent. So European empires started to go out into the world after the Age of Discovery, and quite a bit later on, they started to compete to control a lot of different parts of the world. Opal, I saw your hand up. You have a concern?
No, I don't.
Okay. I just can't always pick, you know, one person or another. I mean, I've chosen you quite a few times already. Okay, so I'm seeing your hand. So this is a French general in Egypt conquering Egypt. And the reason was, and this is how we're going to start to get really connected to Egypt for the first time, Europeans started to become really interested in Egypt and get kind of busy over there. And sorry about that noise. We were a little distracted over here. Okay, so now let me just bring you over to this here, which is kind of a cool thing. Oh, it's going to take a little time. All right, so if we look at this map is not quite 1798, but it's going to really, really serve our purpose. It's a map of the British Empire. All right, so let me get the annotation tools here. And this, because you guys are doing some European geography, so hopefully you're getting your head wrapped around geography stuff these days. This is Britain, right, and Ireland. And, well, this is the United States, and it's not inside the British Empire. Why? It's one of our anchor facts, ladies and gentlemen, for the entire history of mankind. Yes, Patrick?
The Declaration of Independence.
Say it out loud
the
and
Declaration
proud.
The Declaration of Independence.
The Declaration of Independence, right? So America is not in the empire. But what I want you to notice is this place over here is. And back in 1798, which is the date we're talking about, it wasn't quite all under British control. But what's this part of the world? Which you can't see from reading it, so you're going to have to know what it is. Otherwise, you won't be able to tell us. Patrick?
Some China?
No, no, nice try. It is part of Asia. Opal, go ahead.
It's India, and I can sort of see it.
Yes, well, okay. I just wanted to see if you knew the area, right? This is India. And now I'm going to, in blue, because it's going to be a little bit harder to see, put Egypt. Okay? Now, we're going to get to your geography maps soon enough here. And I'm going to want you to have your geography maps ready for the next class. And so what had happened was, France is here. Napoleon went here. Conquered Egypt because England and France were enemies and he wanted to go here and take India away from Britain. Okay, so the European countries were competing for control over different parts of the world. You can see that the British had this part of the world, they had this part of the world, they had this part of the world, they had this part of the world. So over time, the British Empire became really large all around the world. And the French were competing with them, so this French general named Napoleon went to Egypt. Okay, so how does a general going and conquering Egypt have anything to do with our connection to Egypt? Well, as it turns out, I don't know if you can see the shape of this funny hat here. They all had these funny shaped hats. I'm going to show you a different painting. As it turns out, Napoleon was not just a general. He's a fascinating person. Here he is, hiding from the sun in this tent over here. I'm sorry, my annotation tools are not always very friendly. So give me a second to get caught up to my intentions here. So here's Napoleon back in the middle of the tent. And does everybody see what people are doing all around him? For instance, what are these guys doing down here? Does anybody recognize what they're doing? This is something that's famous about ancient Egypt. What are these three guys doing together? They're carrying something. You guys recognize what it is? Patrick?
A sarcophagus.
A sarcophagus, good word. Yes, exactly. And inside is what? Yes?
A mummy.
A mummy, absolutely. Egypt is famous for these objects, and there's hieroglyphs written all over it. As it turns out, Napoleon was not just interested in conquering, he was very interested in history. So he wanted to learn more about Egypt because he found that Egypt was fascinating and the Egyptians had created such amazing things. So he didn't just bring soldiers with him, he brought archaeologists and historians and scientists, hundreds and hundreds of them, with him to Egypt. And the goal was to try to connect to the archaic past. So we are actually connected to the archaic past because of a French general named Napoleon. And as it turns out, they found a bunch of stuff hidden in the ground and in different places and so on that allowed us to finally make a new and stronger connection to the ancient Egyptians. And this is where we're going to leave for today. The strong connection was made possible by this. Which I will definitely post a link to so you can take a close look at it tomorrow. Here's a beautiful photograph on Wikipedia. And if you will look, we'll take a closer look at it tomorrow, of course. But it's called the Rosetta Stone. And this is our bridge to ancient Egypt. Without it, we would still be very disconnected from ancient Egypt. Thanks to this object, more than any other, this is our strongest link. We have a connection to archaic Egypt. So we're going to learn exactly how it became our connection. And what you need for tomorrow's class is this. Everybody recognize this? You better recognize it. Week one, geography. So everybody needs to have their week one geography map ready with them. And you can go and you can make sure that you find the place on the map called Rosetta. Because this object is called the Rosetta Stone, so you better know where they found it. Opal, question or comment?
Should I go back and watch week one?
You should go back today and find the geography map from week one. That's what you should do. You don't have to listen to everything to get caught up, but you should find the geography work from week one and do it if you haven't done it. If you have done it, you need to have it in front of you for tomorrow's class. Okay? So this is going to be the first time where we have an opportunity to make a connection between the geography work and the history work, and it's very important to do because we study geography to help us with history, to help us understand the world that we live in a different way than through history. They're connected, and we need them both. Okay? So everybody tomorrow should have their geography map so that we can learn more about this Rosetta Stone that was found in a place called Rosetta. And that will allow us then to make our connection once and for all to ancient Egypt. All right? Good luck getting that ready. And so, like I said, you'll also have some class notes to help you with the word archaic. If you want to read up on that, I will definitely have the class notes posted for last week as well. And we will finally get this nailed down here so that we know how to connect to ancient Egypt. Okay, thanks everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
Bye.